Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast, a podcast for teachers of physics made by physics teachers. My name's Thomas WP, a part-time A-level, mostly physics teacher, and I'm joined today by Robin Griffiths.
Hello, hello. It's lovely to be here. It's really exciting to be talking about the topic we're talking about today, which I won't give away.
Yeah, I think, and we have a special guest who's, I think, one of your little physics heroes.
One of my little physics heroes, one of my great physics heroes. Yes, there's certain people who just do a huge amount for the physics community, and I just think are fabulous people. And they seem to be tireless in pursuit of promoting physics and everything like that. So having this guy on is great.
So without further ado, let me welcome David Cotton. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I teach in Preston, or D. Preston, as my wife calls it, in the Northwest. And it's a sixth form college. I've taught for many years in secondary, challenging schools. I've done it all, really. And I also have done many things with the Institute of Physics, and I'm currently a moderator on Talk Physics, and I get involved with workshops and day events and this kind of thing as well.
Thanks, David. Now, David's here because he is an expert on travelling to CERN. He's done a page on Talk Physics, which I'm sure we'll get to. And he contacted us as a result of us sending out a tweet at PhysicsTP, saying we're going to do a podcast on visiting CERN. Has anyone got anything to contribute? Now, as well as David, we had Aris Dakanalis get in touch, and I had a chat with him, and let's play what he said just to get the ball rolling.
My name is Aris. I'm a physics teacher. I teach physics and astronomy. So usually we go for a couple of nights. However, the feedback we get from the students, because they have such a good time, is that they think it's a bit too short. Travel operators know that Geneva is a very expensive place to stay, which is why for students they offer a hostel or some budget hotels like the ones we usually find next to airports. They are both actually very, very good. And there are a number of things that one can do. So first of all, the History of Science Museum is very well worth it. It's got lots of interesting exhibits. It's got optics, early battery models, microscopes. It usually has some sort of non-permanent exhibition as well. It's small, but lovely. Apart from the Science Museum, which is situated in a lovely park, about half an hour walk from there is the United Nations headquarters, the Palais des Nations, which is also very much worth it. You get a lovely tour, learn about the history of the United Nations, but you also need to book it in advance. And the queue can be harrowing sometimes, so you need to perhaps allow some extra time. We've had to wait for over an hour once because the queue was huge and they had only one person in the ticket booth, but the visit is well worth it. Next to the Palais des Nations, again, about 15-minute walk from there, is the Red Cross Museum, which is one of my favorite museums in Geneva. You also need to book there. And one little caveat is that they don't accept payment in advance, and you also need to have either cash or a debit card to pay for the tickets right there and then. But it is fantastic to see all the work that the Red Cross has done all over the globe since it was founded, and it's also quite immersive. My favorite aspect of the tour is some rooms where there are some huge screens, life-size screens, with a life-size recording of a human that is about to tell you their own personal story. And the way for them to start telling you the story, for the video to start playing, is they've got their hand up, and you have to physically go and touch their hand with your hand. And there's a sort of connection there. And then the video starts, and then in your headphones, you start to listen to their own personal story, and it's just fantastic, really, really good. Apart from the museums, I mean, you can probably fit two of them in a day. Weather permitting, depending on the season, the lake cruise is fantastic. It lasts about for an hour, and we were very fortunate to do this on a day with marvelous weather. It was really, really glorious. I mean, it was fantastic. So where do you eat? I've been personally very satisfied with the food offered both by the hostel and by the hotel, the budget hotel that we stayed at. But otherwise, most travel operators will allow you to book at least one or two nights out. You could get some sort of cheese fondue for the kids, which they love. On the day that you visit CERN, you will have lunch at the CERN restaurant, which is sublime. There's so much variety. It's crazy. There's like at least five different buffets that you can choose from. But you can get a pizza and a drink for a tenner easily, and it's a huge pizza as well. Otherwise, it is quite expensive. Geneva is ridiculously expensive. So even going out at McDonald's or, you know, getting a sandwich can easily cost of the order of £8 to £10. So you should budget for that as well. What I love to do is take them out for an evening walk, because the lake in the night, it's marvelous. You can see all the shops lit up. You can cross all those bridges time and again. So I wholeheartedly recommend an evening walk in Geneva. Window shopping as well. And I say window shopping because unless you want to buy a Cartier it's ridiculously expensive piece of jewelry. I'll never forget that time where some of our sixth formers went in straight into one of those super posh, super expensive jewelry shops, and they came out with a bag, and I was like, oh my God, don't tell me they blew £1,000 on or a few thousand on a watch or something. And of course, I queried later and I said, hey, what did you guys buy? Did you actually buy anything? And they went, oh, no, we just went in for the catalogue, sir. So, yeah, I was pleasantly relieved that they just didn't blow a few thousand on a compulsive buy in Geneva. Anyway, I say window shopping because Geneva is ridiculously expensive. Even chocolate's ludicrous. I mean, a bar of chocolate, which is handmade, you won't get it for cheaper than £7 or £8 from a chocolatier. But during the walk as well, we usually allow some free time for the students, and we allow them for about 2 hours on their own to just go window shopping, go have a drink, a hot chocolate or something, and then come back, of course, with parental consent. And the other thing which is amazing and I recommend is going for bowling. And there is a bowling alley at a shopping center, which is right next to the Geneva Football Stadium on the top floor. And it's about 15, 20 francs per game, but it's good fun. Students love it. And the other thing that I would like to mention, which has is about the pitfalls. If you have non-British, non-EU students in your party, you need to obtain a special form from the British Council that is signed by the head to confirm that said students will return to the UK because they are studying there.
So that's Aris, and very enthusiastic. I too am very enthusiastic. I'm taking my third trip in a few weeks. So I just want to run through a few of those things. I know you've written a page on talking physics, which maybe we'll come to later, but how long is the trip that you do, David?
It's the same, really. It's two nights. We fly out and then arrive in the evening, go have a meal, little walk around the old town, some nice cannons to see and various things. And then we go back to the hotel. We stay at a place called Hotel Pax. We stayed there for many years. They always look after us. It's on the tram route straight to CERN. So we go there the next morning. So I saw Radley Physics was there recently. And again, like Aris, they were talking about all these places they visited, the museum, the United Nations. But actually, we've spent the whole time at CERN. What we do is we've got local universities like Lancaster University, which have been very good to us. And they meet us, say, the first morning, and they take us on a little sort of tour of what they do and sit the students down and explain things to them about the Standard Model or the hunt for the Higgs, or they actually do some work with bees, with bee sort of to do with symmetry and this kind of thing. And once we have done that, then we go for lunch, then do the standard tour. You can have lots of different things. We've had them all, I think, over the years. Atlas, CMS, my favourite, and there's the old synchrotron, which you can go and see as well. And then we go back, have a meal. And then the next day we go back to CERN and we usually meet the MediPix group. And then from there we go straight to the airport and fly back.
That's interesting. I mean, I always feel we don't spend enough time at CERN when we go, and all we do is the standard tour. So you have ties with your local university and that gets you in.
Yeah, we're very lucky. We've always had strong links with Lancaster anyway, and then we just sort of mentioned we were going to CERN and what do they do. And we've always met their research group at CERN now. Sometimes it's different people, whoever's there, but the head of the group, Roger Jones, is very committed to us meeting his researchers and people there. We've actually had students that have come to CERN with us and then said, hey, I'm working at CERN. When you next come out, meet me. And that was really good. And we met one student, ex-student, that gave us a sound file that was where the protons are fired off when they sort of dump them into this chamber under the ground, and you can actually hear it.
It never occurred to me, actually, to get, and it's a great tip, to get in touch with research groups who work at CERN and just say to them, hey, we're bringing a school trip out. Could you give us an hour of your time? Could you talk to us through your research projects? It's a great thing. Because it's true that a lot of higher education institutions, that they have a kind of outreach mandate, don't they? That this is something that is actually a good thing for them.
Absolutely, yeah.
Our nearest university is Cambridge, so maybe we should reach out to them.
Well, they have that from above, as it were, and that ticks boxes for them. I mean, at most universities, there's two things. The one is there is this agenda that they have, and they have to please the people upstairs by doing outreach. But above and beyond that, they're usually really keen to engage and feed the future physicists. They realise they need them as well, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's true that I don't think I've ever met anybody who works at a university in any field who doesn't like to talk about their research. It's pretty safe bet, isn't it, really?
Well, we were out there when the Higgs was discovered, and that was fantastic for the students to be there the day that was the press release was going on, and to go and meet our research groups. Then everyone kind of there was feeding into it. It was fantastic.
That is superb, isn't it? And also, for me, that's just improved the legend of Dave Cotton as well, that, you were there when they discovered the Higgs, effectively. So, in my head, you've just become even more of a physics cult hero to me. There we go.
Well, CERN is definitely one of my best trips. We try and do as many trips as we can to all sorts of local things, talks, this. But the students are always so alive. They all buy the hard hats, though, in the shop. And they sit on the plane and, a quarter of the plane is yellow CERN hard hats.
So I think we should talk a bit about the practicalities of eating and the cost of that. We would go for a fondue in the changing rooms of the lake swimming pool, right, which is quite rustic but interesting. You're sort of inside, outside, literally in the changing room, sitting under the hooks of the changing rooms.
We've always eaten at the same restaurant the first night we arrive. And they do us like a student special because you're right, or what Harris said, it's very expensive. And we really warn the parents about how much they will need to take just to eat. But we take them to this restaurant, they do a nice pasta or a pizza, and it's just as simple as a meal and a drink. And then the next day we go to a restaurant called Holy Cow, which someone recommended to us, and now we've just always gone there because it's amazing. And I like big burgers, me.
So, in terms of cost, how much are we talking here? How much should they allow for a meal?
I think we were looking at 25 Swiss francs.
Yeah, so I tell the kids, if you want to eat reasonably well, you've got to allow £20, because one Swiss franc's about 80p. So if they want to eat, a burger and chips and a drink is going to cost £20. And they've got two evening meals. I build the cost of the fondue into the trip, but we take them out. And the first night, I usually say, look, I'm going to take anyone who wants to the local pizza place on the corner. But if you feel brave and you want to go and find your own food, that's fine. You're six swimmers. And they always all come to the pizza restaurant. And I hold their hands while they order. I say, you've got to look after your own table, but I will be there in case you get lost. And They do seem to do all right. There's usually one or two French or Italian speakers in the group.
Yeah, yeah, we find that. And we're lucky we have two members of staff that speak French.
So food's about 20 quid a meal, and you know, even McDonald's is not cheap.
Yeah, we tend to have McDonald's on the last day when we get on our way to the airport, because it's a convenient place for, well, for me to sit while they all go shopping, or window shopping, as Eris says. We'll come back with the tiniest little chocolate for mummy, and I just sit in the McDonald's and look after all the bags. Because it's another thing, we go very light, you know, no hold luggage, and they take everything. What we warn them is on the last day, you'll be taking your bag with you to CERN. So, you know, they just have small rucksacks, and it works quite well.
Yeah, we're similar. We go to CERN on the last day, and I think because it's a Saturday, they only do morning tours, so we have to be there by 10, which is a stretch for the poor kids by then. But we leave the bags in the hostel. But we like you, only do hand luggage. So we do the whole CERN trip. We have a lunch there. We've got loads of time because we fly out about 7. And then we go back into town, and then we pick up something. So we might go to the Natural History Museum, which has got some good physics upstairs. And then we trog back to the hostel, pick up the bags, go to the airport, get home. And they eat at the airport, which is just as expensive as everywhere else, and heaving.
One tip I gave my students when we were in the CERN canteen, some of them ordered a burger. It looked very cooked on the outside, but it was such pig meat. And that's not to everyone's taste. So I always warn the students about the burgers. But the CERN canteen is fantastic. Like Aris said, there's such selection.
It's amazing.
And there's such good cakes. And I could spend my whole time in there, to be fair.
And it is enormous. And I think when you book the trip, because when you're going to CERN, you do have to book the CERN trip. You have to tick a box saying, we want to use the canteen.
Yes. Well, we find where we go to the research people first as well. They often take us to the canteen. Sort of, it's booked as part of our thing, but they'll sort of guide us there so we're in. And actually stay and sit with us and talk to the students as well over a meal, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I find the guide you get is very hit and miss. And we've had the most brilliant guides who enthuse the kids and then come to the canteen and stay with us and bring their mates over and chat with us. And then you can have the dullest, dullest people, which is very, very disappointing when you've gone all that way. I say on average they're very good, but it is hit and miss. And I think you're at the mercy of people who've volunteered to do it. They're all, I think they're mostly volunteering in there just because they feel passionate about the subject. Volunteers.
And some have good ideas as well. Like you say, like, so if you're going to CERN, you must put a, what you call it, like a paper chain of paper clips, no, a chain of paper clips in your pocket, in case you get CMS. Because CMS, you'll get near enough to walls where it will bend towards them, where the magnetic field's so intense on the other side. And we only know that because we had a good guide once, and then where we'd split into groups, the other group come and said, and we were going, did you see this? And they were going, and they were like, no, our guide didn't have paper clips. So paper clips in the pocket, ready for CMS.
That's a good tip. So, yeah, we go. Paper clips in the pocket. Watch the pink meat. And, yeah, we're starting to build some these are priceless tips. This is good stuff.
I've never made it to CMS. I've always got the cryogenic facility every time.
Is that the magnets, isn't it? Is that the cryogenic facility?
They have a really good display there. They talk about the superconductors and the huge currents and the challenges, the engineering challenges of taking these massive currents from room temperature down to minus, you know, to minus 270 or whatever it is. I find it fascinating. But that's the only place I've ever been taken to. Usually we do two stops, and I've had the control centre with all the champagne bottles, and I've had the satellite one. There's a satellite control centre there as well.
Yes, we've been into that. We saw, what was my favourite? Like I say, CMS is my favourite, but one year we were there when Atlas, when it was all shut down, and we got right down into Atlas. And that was incredible.
Wow.
So we were right next to, you know, the standard pictures amazing. You see next to that big detector. We were sort of right next to that, which was good.
Now, when you get to CERN, there's two exhibitions you can take the kids to. There's Microcosm and the what's it, the globe of science and innovation, which I don't really like. But I think Microcosm's really great for the kids and has a fantastic cloud chamber.
That cloud chamber is incredible, actually. You can, when you start showing the students that, because we do have cloud chambers in college, but they can sit, stand by that. You have to move them on, you know. It's like, come on, we've got other things to do. They just look at it for hours.
It's almost as good as the one you had in your meeting room at the IP, Robin, I should think. But it does have buttons you can press to change what's going into the cloud chamber, and it's huge. I mean, it's a huge space.
The one in the foyer of the Institute of Physics building, that's right, is similar, very similar design.
Yeah, it's well worth a visit, actually, if you're around about King's Cross and, you know, the foyer of the Institute of Physics is kind of open and you can just pop in, and they do have a cloud chamber as the kind of coffee table in reception, which I used to think was quite cool. I thought that was a nice touch. I don't know why. It was good.
So there's Microcosm with the fantastic cloud chamber and all the detectors as you get further in. And then across the road, there's that huge wooden globe. I think that's much more public-focused. I don't think that's as good.
No, but what it does have one good thing in there, which is a spark detector. And it's wires that you can see that are at obviously really high voltage. And as cosmic rays come down through it, it causes flashes.
The thing I always look for in there is a very early, possibly the first synchrotron, I'm terrible, I muddle them up. I think it's got two little tiny Ds. Cyclotron, isn't it?
I've already got it wrong. I've already said it's a synchrocyclotron. So it's a cyclotron, yeah. Really.
And it's tiny. It fits in the palm of your hand. It's a really early particle accelerator.
That's right. It's the first one they had there. And it's quite a new exhibition. And we've luckily had that twice now. And there's this incredible projection onto it. And one of the interesting things is it talks about how... I can never say this right. Louis... you know, I mean, Louis de Broglie. Of, you know, particle and wave physics fame, he said, because all the physicists had left Europe, or lots had left Europe after the war, if you build this machine, they will come back. And they did.
That's a lovely story. Yeah, I never know how to pronounce de Broglie either. I always say de Broglie like that, but I'm sure somebody's going to say, no, I think you'll find. It's de Broglie or something like that, and I'll get it wrong. But anyway.
Yeah, I kind of alternate in class.
Yeah, keep everyone happy. I like that.
The other interesting thing about, let's just call him Louis, was that he was really into music. Didn't really want to study physics, I'm sure. So what was interesting is that when he got into physics, it was all to do with resonance and sound and waves that he sort of brought to physics. So it's good, really.
Now, coming back to the trip, David, I'm looking at... You've done a page on talking physics. We'll put a link in the show notes. And I've just been reading through it. Is it you who does experiments on the plane with a particle accelerator, or is that someone who's read your page?
So when I was young, I read a book about experiments on aeroplanes, and I remember doing a few. And I've always carried this tradition on with the students. So the first one, we build accelerometers with protractors and bits of blue tack and string. But the most popular one is we all get the cheapest pop bottles with the thinnest plastic, you know, and then tighten them up, empty, of course, but tighten them up at their highest point. Always ask when we're at the highest altitude. And it's great coming into land and watching those all crunch up. But the other thing, like you say, is I've run this particle detector on the plane before. And the cosmic ray muons you see are fantastic, you know. At 30,000 feet, they're really present. And then when you run it on the ground, you just hardly see them at all. And I got that through the Institute for Research in Schools. Mm. It was a lady called Becky Parker set up this thing called the Institute for Research in Schools. And very early on, there was a thing called CERN at school. And she got these detectors funded. And through my work with the Institute, I was responsible for handing one of these to other schools and showing them how it worked. But also use it with my own students. And it's basically a little chip that detects charged particles. And like I say, you run it up on those aeroplanes and you can, it's amazing what you see, you know, they see all the particles. And one year we had an air hostess that had studied A-level physics. And, you know, we said to her, can you tell us when we're at the highest point? And she came back from the pilot and said, we're now at the highest point. And, you know, that's when we ran it. There's a famous physicist from NASA who famous for actually firing neutrons into his eyeball. But he has one of these detectors, and he was telling me that the pilots have had him into the cockpit as they fly over the Arctic. And he can show them really what's going on and what they're actually getting passed through their bodies like.
Yes, it is. It's worrying, isn't it? Because if you look at the XKCD radiation thing, they get a massive radiation dose, and you can think about them flying backwards and forwards every day. Wow. And these are high energy. This is about as high energy as it gets, isn't it?
The detector itself, is, you always worry about it. You've got this funny bit of equipment in your bag, and you're going through customs, you know. And I said to this guy in Switzerland, I said, this is just a particle detector. And he says, oh, CERN, you're going to CERN. He says, you'd be surprised what we see come through here. You know, all these physicists with their crazy bits of equipment, wires hanging out everywhere.
So this is the place to go physicist spotting, is Geneva Airport, because you can go and see crazy physicists with all sorts of different detection equipment yeah. carting it through customs. Nothing to declare. No, yeah. All fine.
Because they wear, when they work underground at places like CMS, these same as you would in the NHS, you know, these radiation detectors. And a few of them have told me they've gone through in their luggage through the X-ray machines at the airport, and then they're summoned to say, you know, you can't work ever again near radioactivity. What happened?
Superb. Love it.
Right. Have we covered everything we want to cover? We think it's a two-day trip, and that's probably about right. Some people tweeted they go on long excursions, so they don't go for 2 days, they go for more. And I'll put those in the show notes.
We do it to keep the cost down, mainly.
How much does your trip cost?
Just under £300, usually.
And do you include any meals in that? No, I'm guessing not.
No. So that's just the flights, really, and you know, the travel to the airport and the travel passes to be on the trams.
So, Dave, presumably you have a talk physics page where all this is laid out, do you? I'm guessing.
Yes. So, on talk physics, which I hope everyone that listens to this has a login for, because it's an excellent resource from the Institute of Physics. Of course, I had to get my plug in there. But I really do believe in the Institute of Physics, and they really do fun, good things. And Talk Physics itself is like a forum where lots of discussion goes on. But what's really nice is there's a place called Talking Physics within that, where people like me can write something, and it's public access. You don't need the login. So I've put it on there, on Talk Physics. And like you say, you could put a link, and it's just, I just keep adding to it as we do more and more CERN trips, just with ideas and what we see and that kind of thing.
So there you go. That's the definitive resource for CERN. And Dave, I'm hoping, will send us a link to it so we can put that in the show notes. And if you're interested, you follow that. Because I've got to say, I hate to confess, I've never done a CERN trip. And the reason being that I've always been a bit sort of put off by, oh my goodness, the paperwork and all the rest of it. And what are we going to do when we get there? And I know CERN is a great trip, but what about around it? Surely you've got to do more than that. So there's loads and loads of great ideas so you can build your trip. By visiting this website, and I'm properly enthused now. I will go and do that.
Yeah, I've put examples of the letters we send to parents, the PowerPoints we use to explain to parents, just everything I could think of, really.
Yeah, I wish I'd seen it when I started organising the trip. It is a great trip. Geneva's not that big a city, so you can walk from you've got the lake coming down like the bottom of a banana, and the hostel sort of on the left of the banana, and you walk round to the tip of the banana, and then you're into the old city, and that's like a 15-minute walk. And it's a lovely walk along the lake, and there's all sorts of interesting things to see, lots of sculptures. And then you're into the city, and you walk up through the old city. It's really charming. And you can really get anywhere quickly, on foot if you want to tire out the kids, or very quickly on a bus or a tram. The public transport is excellent there, and it really is a great trip. I mean, even if like us, you just go to CERN, and like Aris, there's so many other things to do, and there's plenty of relevant physics. The History of Science Museum's really good. It's got some very early capacitors in there, like Leyden jars, I think they're called. So there's tons to do there, and it is 2 nights, 3 days is just right.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, we also do 2 trips within 1 week, so it really works for us that we can take 2 groups out if we only do 2 nights. But I really recommend you get hold of your local university if you're going to CERN. Say, what do you do at CERN? Because they're nearly all researching there, and they will meet you.
Well, thank you very much, David. I think your page, looking at it, is just a brilliant resource. So thank you for creating that. I will definitely be doing some of those experiments at altitude.
Yes. Don't open a yogurt. Oh, no, it's a fantastic experience. And the students absolutely love it. I make them all buy a book called Smashing Physics by John Butterworth, you know, a few weeks in advance, and they have to read that as pre-CERN reading. But that's all about CERN. It's a fantastic book.
And my chance of getting my kids to read that is slim to none. Anyway, we've probably talked too long, but before you go, David, do you have a CERN-related practical in memoriam, a practical you want to be remembered for, or a demo?
So one of the things before we go is I normally do a little bit of a session with the students on a few things, a few of the ideas of physics of particle accelerators. And today is actually the International Day of Static, which is kind of fitting to talk about this. So the salad bowl accelerator is a plastic bowl with strips of aluminium tape, which I run it off a Van de Graaff. People run it off different things. I find the Van de Graaffs are the best things to run these things. And some of the strips are connected to the dome, others are earthed. You have a conducting ball, so I use the table tennis ball coated in aquadag. There's all sorts of conductive paints you can get. And again, you can see this thing on the Talking Physics thread I wrote about CERN. But the ball, you put this in, this thing connects to the Van de Graaff, and it kind of it repels from the strip it's on, drops its charge on the earth strip, and then moves on and picks up charge again. And it's quite incredible the way this ball just keeps spinning around and around. And you can talk about some of the principles of static electricity and acceleration, which is very good for the students to sort of see and get their heads around for A, exams, and B, as a prequel to going to CERN.
That sounds a genius experiment. I'd love to see the recipe for that. I think one of my colleagues saw it at an IOP conference. Maybe even you told them about it, but I'd love to make one.
Sounds great, doesn't it? A lovely one. I think that should go in the show notes as well.
Yeah, there's very good instructions on the internet for it. There's someone I follow on Twitter, Susie, that has a very good talk with the Royal Institution, actually, on accelerators. That's again, I make that pre-watching for my students. And also when we're doing particle physics, I make them send it out to them as a bit of flip learning, watch this Royal Institution lecture. And it's all about particle physics, but there's a large part, or a part of it, is the salad bowl accelerator. Susie's bowl's got very gentle sides as well. It's been specially made so the ball rolls up as it gets more and more energy.
Wonderful picture. Well, we will see if we can dig out that link and put it in the show notes too. Well, thank you very much, David. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Oh, I've really enjoyed myself as well. It's like all good physics, it's good to share good physics.
It really is. Thank you for listening to the Physics Teaching Podcast. And special thanks this week to David Cotton and Aris Dakanalis. The podcast is presented by Robin Griffiths and me, Thomas WP, and produced and edited by me, Thomas WP. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.